I'm here on a nice sunny day in Santa Monica, California, and I started wondering about light and what it's made of. Is it a particle? Is it a wave? Light is one of those things that most people don't seem to fully understand. If you were to zoom in on a ray of light, what would you see? It might help to begin with this. Light is a form of radiation. We all know that too much sunlight can trigger skin cancer. We also know that radiation exposure can raise the risk of developing some forms of cancer, so it's not hard to put the two together. But not all forms of radiation are the same. Photons are subatomic particles that carry electromagnetic radiation and force. When electrons become excited, they can emit a pack of light, or a photon. Biophotons are photons of light in the ultraviolet and low visible light range that are produced by a biological system. Although photons are most often associated with light, they do exist in all matter, including human cells. As you walk around, you're constantly emitting low levels of these light particles, although they're invisible to the naked eye. How bioluminescent you are might just say something about your health. The photons in animals, plant matter, and human cells are referred to as ultra-weak photons. And scientists have been researching biophoton emissions since the 1960s and their connection to metabolism and disease. Biophotons may be detected with photomultipliers or by means of an ultra-low noise CCD camera to produce an image, using an exposure time of typically 15 minutes for plant material.
Inside is very dark when I close the door, and the plant has dots of light from outside. And if I put on the device, then you can see the light which is now emitted from the plant on the screen.
Nothing connected to the plant?
Nothing connected to the plant. It's just the plant itself. The light, what the plant has stored from outside, and it's now emitting the light. And you see, the intensity is now decreasing, it's going down. And we watch that increasing intensity, and with other devices, we have a better solution of the intensity. Here you see the plant is not here, and you also see the flickering of the photons. That's from the background. With other devices, we have a better background solution. And now you don't see much more here. And we have the possibility to illuminate the plant again. I will do that now. Now we are illuminating it. And if I now switch on, the plant has also stored the light.
But it doesn't have anything to do with chlorophyll, right?
No, it doesn't have to do with that. That's the biophotons. Every biological and non-biological systems can store a bit of light.
If you wait it long enough, there will be still light.
Yes, yes. So the light is always there.
And you can detect it.
We can detect it. We have some photomultipliers that are much more sensitive than this camera, because this plant is emitting much of light.
Fritz Albert Popp is a German researcher in biophysics, particularly in the study of biophotons. He has been quoted as saying that, "We know today that man, essentially, is a being of light. We are still on the threshold of fully understanding the complex relationship between light and life, but we can now say empathetically that the function of our entire metabolism is dependent on light." Born in 1938 in Frankfurt, Germany, his research confirms the existence of biophotons, defined as particles of light with no mass that transmit information within and between cells. His work shows that DNA in a living cell stores and releases photons, creating biophotonic emissions that may hold the key to illness and health.
Professor Pop, founder of the International Institute of Biophysics, explains to us what a biophoton is and its crucial role in cellular communication.
Maybe we should explain a little bit what photon is, because it's an elementary particle of light, right? So when you say that there are only a few photons, it's a very, very low intensity of light.
Very low intensity. It corresponds to a candle at a distance of about 20 kilometers. So they are really single units of an electromagnetic field. Photons are events, are processes where energy is taken up by the multiplier or by a detector from an external electromagnetic field.
Can you please share with us what they actually are, how do they work, and where are they coming from?
The biophotons are photons coming out from living systems. Therefore, we say not bioluminescence, but we say biophotons, because they are so weak that you can count single photons. And the best is to tell you at an example what they do and why they are important. We have in every cell, we have about 100,000 chemical reactions per second. If I say 21, 22, in every of your cells there happened 100,000 chemical reactions. And nobody can tell you who is responsible for that chemical reaction takes place just at the right time and on the right position. And if I tell you there are photons which are responsible for that, because a chemical reaction can only happen if the molecule which is reacting is excited by a photon. So the photon is necessary to stimulate a molecule to a chemical reactions.
So any alive tissue, any alive cells produce photons, produces light.
We are swimming in an ocean of light. It is very impossible to get a complete darkness. You have always photons. Some people say it's not surprising that in the cells you have also photons. But it is surprising because of the following. Not the intensity of the photons are important, but they have a very high degree of coherence.
Coherence is an important aspect of biophotons. It refers to the ability of a wave, and light comes as waves, to exhibit what is known as interference. Interference, when it refers to light waves, means that two or more waves can be added to result in a new wave pattern.
I would say they have a very high degree of order, extremely high degree of order. This was shown not long ago by a group of chemists at the Berkeley, in Berkeley in California. They showed that by photosynthesis, where the photons are used for getting energy, the coherence is extremely high. So coherence means that the photons can be superposed, that the message which is submitted by the photons gets very, very clear. For instance, when we speak together, it may be the lower the noise is, the more silent we are, the better we understand each other.
Biophotons are fundamentally different from heat radiation because, while both are forms of electromagnetic radiation, biophotons are extremely weak light emissions generated by living organisms within the visible light spectrum, whereas heat radiation is primarily infrared radiation emitted by an object due to its temperature and is significantly more intense than biophotons at typical body temperatures. Essentially, biophotons are not simply a byproduct of heat generated by the body, but rather a distinct phenomenon linked to biomechanical processes within cells.
Heat is the waste of electromagnetic fields, but photons, biophotons, are very distinct signals. Heat has a very low degree of coherence.
Noise.
But if these photons have a high degree of coherence, they can work as submitters of information. The lower the noise is, the lower the intensity is, the better is the chance that you can submit the information with a very high efficiency. For instance, not long ago, American physicist and chemist showed that during the photosynthesis, the photons which are coming from the sun are taken up with an extraordinary high degree of coherence, which allows them that only a few percent are transmitted into heat. They have a very high efficiency. And the same happens when you transmit information. You have to have a very high efficiency in order to have a clean understanding of what happens. And the information which we call about is created by the field, by the electromagnetic field behind. And this field is able to produce a pattern. And always, if you have a spatial dynamical pattern, so it's not only a pattern in the locality, it is also a pattern in time. This spatial dynamical pattern provides the information of a cell. And it tells the cell what it has to do at what time and what place.
Despite great progress in neuroscience, there are still fundamental unanswered questions about the brain, including the origin of subjective experience and consciousness. Given that biophotons have been discovered in the brain, it's interesting to explore if neurons use photonic communication in addition to the well-studied electrochemical signals. An article in the January 2021 issue of Physics World discusses recent research suggesting a link between intelligence and the frequency of biophotons in animals' brains. In 2016, Zhu Wang and colleagues at a university in China studied brain slices from a bullfrog, mouse, chicken, pig, monkey, and human. They found that increasing intelligence was associated with a shift in the biophotons' frequency towards the red end of the spectrum. That said, where there are photons, some researchers speculate that there might be quantum mechanics, giving rise to the term quantum consciousness. They claim that if there's an optical communication happening, the biophotons our brains produce might be affected by quantum entanglement, meaning there can be a strong link between these photons, our consciousness, and possibly what many cultures and religions refer to as spirit. In a couple of experiments, scientists discovered that rat brains can pass just one biophoton per neuron a minute, but human brains with many more neurons can convey more than a billion biophotons per second. This raises the question, could it be possible that the more light one can produce and communicate between neurons, the more conscious they are? If there's any correlation between biophotons, light, and consciousness, it can have strong implications that there's more to light than mainstream science is aware of. One of the most exciting implications the discovery that our brains can produce light gives is that maybe our consciousness or spirit is not contained within our bodies. Quantum entanglement says that two entangled photons react if one of the photons is affected, no matter where the other photon is in the universe, without any delay. Maybe there's a world that exists within light, and no matter where you are in the universe, photons can act as portals that enable communication between these two worlds. Maybe our spirit and consciousness communicate with our bodies through these biophotons, and the more light we produce, the more we awaken and embody the wholeness of our consciousness. This can explain the phenomenon of why the state of a photon is affected simply by consciously observing it, as it is proven in many quantum experiments. Maybe our observation communicates something through our biophotons with the photon that is being observed. Of course, this is just speculation, but if true, it seems to intertwine with many traditionally spiritual beliefs.
For my ally is the Force, and a powerful ally it is. Life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you.
Many religions dating back to the dawn of human civilization have reported of saints, ascended beings, and enlightened individuals having shining circles or glowing halos around their heads. From ancient Greece and Rome to teachings of Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and Christianity, among many other religions, sacred individuals were depicted surrounded by a shining circle or glowing auric field. If they were as enlightened as they are described, maybe their depiction of having a luminescent aura was symbolic of the higher consciousness they allegedly operated with, hence a higher frequency in production of biophotons. While in a traditional esoteric context, the halo represents the sun, solar symbolism is still indicative of light or illumination. This brings us to Krillian photography, also known as aura photography, a study which dates back to the 1700s, but officially invented in 1939 by Semyon Davidovich Krillian. The process reveals visible auras around the objects photographed, and I recently decided to give it a try myself. A well-known Krillian photography experiment that documents a leaf as it slowly dies involves taking repeated photographs of a freshly plucked leaf at intervals, showing how the aura or corona discharge around the leaf diminishes as the leaf dehydrates and withers, often interpreted as a visual representation of the leaf's declining life force. To understand what aura photography is, we should first define an aura. Unlike our physical bodies, our aura is supposedly invisible energetic emanations surrounding the body of any living creature. While not usually visible to the naked eye, people doing meditation, for example, are sometimes said to have a glow on their face or a positive magnetic presence that can be felt. This is their aura. The Krillian photograph, which shows a glowing silhouette around the photographed object, is said by some alternative practitioners to depict emotional and physical states, as well as one's life force energy, or chi. While the use of Krillian photography has largely fallen by the wayside as a diagnostic tool these days, there are still alternative practitioners who believe in it as an accurate way to help those who seek to gain insight into a person's energetic state. While this technique can hardly be considered scientific, as there are many factors involved in the procedure, such as the humidity level in the room, or the degree of oil or sweat on the hand as one places it on top of a metal discharge plate. Of course, there are different types of photographic techniques, and results tend to fluctuate depending on the setting, mood, and surroundings of the subject being photographed. Here are some video examples showing bioenergy said to be documented by the yellow and green frequencies in the bioenergetic field. Notice the constant moving dynamics and shifting frequency signature as the subject, in this case a yoga instructor, shifts states of consciousness. The higher vibratory field is represented by a golden signature in the bioenergetic field, or aura, not ordinarily seen. Like all living things, this little dog has a sizable radiant field, even when he sits quietly. Notice now, as he greets his master, the obvious love and affection between them increases the dynamic radiation from their bodies, even the dog's tail and man's head. No wonder so many people have pets that give them pleasure and provide a vital field of energy to interact with. Wherever there is motion, there is increased flow in the field that humans interact with, illustrated by the waves and his body. The tumbling water is negatively charged and ionized, further expanding and heightening his field. Here, we see a child move into the mother's field. The affection between them increases and expands the energetic signature. Individual fields blend and enhance when there's a warm, caring relationship. In this example, the mother is also practicing a meditative technique known as oming. On the breath inhalation, the radiant field diminishes, and on exhalation, it expands and envelops the child. The vibrations from Gregorian chants, oming, humming, singing, and whistling have been known to perk up emotions and expand the consciousness. That said, my own photographs seem to show a full and solid auric field with a color and consistency which I was told was indicative of what the practitioner referred to as life force energy, but is known in places like China as qi, in India as prana, and in European alchemical societies as vril. European alchemists were not only interested in turning lead to gold, but transmuting carnal lust into spiritual gold or life force energy, which manifests as increased vitality, creativity, intuition, health, and personal magnetism. The various esoteric mystery schools throughout antiquity had various methods for harnessing and amplifying life force or vril, but none more potent than what is created by the tantric union of male and female polarity, performed in a sacred act which does not expel the vital essence through climax, but instead redirects and circulates it to attain a heightened state of spiritual illumination. A Taoist practitioner that has introduced some of these ancient guarded techniques to the West is Montauk Chia.
So the Taoism, they said there are two kinds of orgasm in the world. One kind of orgasm we call outward paw orgasm. One kind of another orgasm we call the inward paw orgasm. The outward paw orgasm is this. You pour all the orgasm out and you finish. But the inward pull orgasm different. The inward pull orgasm is you will have the orgasm non-stop and last so long, and you bring back the best energy you have to build your body, and you recycle that energy.
Many Taoist practitioners link the loss of sacred fluids to the loss of vital life force energy, where excessive fluid loss results in premature aging, disease, fatigue, and lack of ambition. The idea is to limit the loss of fluid while increasing the heightened orgasmic state and expanding it to illuminate dormant abilities that manifest when the pineal gland or third eye is awakened through internal alchemy.
Because the Tao master discovered the G-spot. Now, one of the German discovered the G-spot, and now scientists, they started it again, said there's no G-spot again. So the lady lose the G-spot again, right? But the G-spot mean a place very sensitive for a lady, okay? But apparently, the Taoism, they said a lady have more sensitive part in between 2 to 3 inches from the front inside there. That is the time you can activate and arousal the energy. Okay, we don't talk about arousal the energy because a lot of preparation you already know, like the kissing, breath, and get the energy ready. Okay, now we go into a changing energy, and we are going into a big draw or the orgasmic upward draw. The big draw and the orgasmic upward draw is involved with how you're going to be. So the big draw will not, when you do the big draw for men, you're not going to be just all the clenching and tightening of the hand in the sexual intercourse, okay? And that is for solo practice. It's not that when you get near orgasm, you say, hey, stop, let me do this. And you no need to clench your teeth Remember, if your partner tongue is in your mouth and you hang your teeth, you're gonna get trouble with your partner. Okay? And now, when you have sex, when you're ready, lady have to ready. And when men get near ejaculations, you have to know your timing. You have to know your timing. Don't go beyond the point of no return. You should go about 85, play safe first. Okay? And when you get near orgasm, the man should be stopped and pull out a little bit. So whether you pull out a little bit and tilt yourself up a little bit. And that's the place the energy can exchange from the top, the gland, and the G-spot, we call the sensitive part. The energy can exchange from here. So now the man will pull up, enough pull up, contract, draw energy up to the head, enough draw energy up to the head. Because of the orgasm energy that you have here, you draw the energy up to the head, you are transfer the orgasm energy, shift the orgasm energy from one place to another place. That is the most beautiful part. You can, all you know, all you want is orgasm, right or not? It's not ejaculation. It's the people mixing all up about ejaculation and orgasm. You want orgasm, you don't want ejaculations. As I said, if the nature don't give orgasm only or ejaculation, we don't enjoy sex. Nobody want it. But we call the orgasm. That's why hook up so tight in the sex. The energy changes, everything changes.
For Taoists, sex was not just about pleasing a man. The woman also had to be stimulated and pleased in order for there to be an energetic exchange and amplification. According to Sun Nu, a female advisor to the Yellow Emperor, if sex were performed in this manner, the woman would create more jing, the Chinese word for essence, and the man could more easily absorb the jing to increase his own qi, or life force. According to Ruan Fang Fu, a Chinese physician and author, renowned for his extensive research into the relationship between Chinese culture and sexuality, many of the ancient texts were dedicated explanations of how a man could use sex to extend his own life, increase vitality, courage, creativity, and spiritual integrity, but only through the absorption of the woman's vital energies. Some Taoists came to call the act of sex the battle of stealing and strengthening. Fang described this battle as, quote, "The ideal was for a man to defeat the enemy in the sexual battle by keeping himself under complete control so as not to emit semen, while at the same time exciting the woman until she reached orgasm and shed her yin essence, which was then absorbed by the man."
Now when you draw this orgasm energy back into the body, you know what happened? This energy will fortify and enhance and rebuild or repair or creating a new energy for you. So the first thing we call a brain orgasm. You're going to feel the brain like blow, so beautiful energy. So the first thing we call brain orgasm is involved gland orgasm also. The energy go up to their brain and first thing go into the pineal and feel the orgasm right open in the head. Okay? And the brain and the energy will fill the pineal gland first, pituitary gland, thyroid, thymus, and all the gland. It fill up all the gland. And you're going to feel the orgasm so beautiful right in the head. And when man pull up, inhale, pull up, inhale, pull up, inhale, pull up, inhale, pull up, draw the orgasm in the head. When man exhale, lady will feel a hot energy go out. That's the time lady will do the big draw. Inhale, squeeze, inhale, pull up, squeeze, and pull up. If lady do first, usually man cannot control and it will be ejaculations. So lady will do the big draw. Draw the energy up. Lady can multiply the orgasm. So we call the orgasm upward draw. So you shift the orgasm in this area. In the normal, the orgasm going to pour out. And you disappear. And no more. But in this way, you shift the orgasm upward. So your orgasm up into the brain. If you compare the sexual organ and this part, it's no comparison. Right now, it's so small here, and the brain is bigger, and the brain and the senses need orgasm also. You see?
Shaped like a tiny pine cone and described as the seat of the soul by French philosopher René Descartes, the pineal gland is a tiny endocrine gland in the middle of your brain that secretes the hormone melatonin. It is thought to facilitate dormant mystical abilities such as clairvoyance, telepathy, and intuition when activated by elevated levels of bioelectromagnetic energy, or qi, which can be drawn up to the head through the transmutation of refined sex energy.
Resting period is the more important part. Resting period. So both of you rest. If you do microcosmic together, just flow the energy, moving around, flow the energy, exchanging energy. It can through the eye, through the tongue, or through the breath, and through the sexual organs. The energy move in the microcosmic. And when you feel that the man is started to lower down, and you go on again. When you get near orgasm again, you pull up the same thing again. You pull up, and draw the orgasm now. The next time you have to go the energy, draw the energy up to the senses orgasm. The senses orgasm is beautiful. People are so, the more you drain out yourself, the less you enjoy life. And you need so much, we call it so empty. When you are more empty, the people is more empty themselves, the more they need something to stimulate outside. And never end, they never look, never end. The more they empty, the more they're looking for. Because when the people lose sexual energy, their senses is more empty. Very, very empty. And they are so empty, they won't look something for. When you move the senses orgasm back, we have many people now report to us that once they experience the senses orgasm, they give up drinking, they give up drug, they give up smoking. You know why? Because they experience certain type better thing than the smoke. The people cannot give up smoke because they cannot find something better than smoke. When they find the orgasm senses so good in the senses, so nice in the senses, they don't want to disturb that. And just give it up. In that moment, they say, hey, why I need smoke? Why I need marijuana? Why I need alcohol? Suddenly they think, hey, this energy is must give me more mass fulfillment and give me more energy. And they give it up. And many people are like that, believe me. Because they started to fulfill, satisfy the senses, and they give it up.
While the benefits of withholding one's vital essence are known to many athletes, inventors, mystics, and philosophers, our modern society is inundated with porn, with porn addiction having an adverse effect on society, not only in terms of men's health and vitality, but in a decline in population and less happy, loving, and fulfilling relationships.
The healing, the loving power, the sexual power is the best healing power you have, because the orgasm energy is the best energy you can have. The seventh is the heart. That is the one we're waiting for. Love. We know it, when people love each other, we multiply the love. We multiply the energy to be love. So when the people fall in love, you know what happened? When they come in, make love, they're producing so much love, they can love everything in the whole world. No? So much love. So that's what we call make love for. And you can direct the energy to heal anything you want. It's so powerful. Now, this is N1 level. The next level we call soul orgasm, which oftentimes when you get to this level, you can choose to have sex or no sex, or physical contact or no physical contact. So, is the soul orgasm is involved with that? Involved with you have to practice the fusion to develop a soul body, and you will project the soul body. So you will project the soul body up the soul body. So you project, when you have sex, you project the soul body out and they meet in the middle. So the orgasm is right happening in the middle of the space. Right in the middle of the space. But you need to practice soul body. You need to condense and build another body. We call their soul body or energy body. We do in fusion one. And that is called a soul orgasm. The soul orgasm. And the next one is a spiritual orgasm, a spiritual, the third body. You need to develop into a lesser carnality to develop a soul body. In olden times, some of the Dharmas, they don't want people to sit and practice sex, and so forth. So a Dharmas in one mountain, another lady Dharmas in another mountain, and at night they know the time, say, okay, we're going to go practice in a different place. They project the energy out in the mid-plane, and they meet together, and they go. And they go to a higher plane and practice, and they come back, they separate back again. It's happened a lot in China. They do this way. And in that way, they're not involved with sex at all. But all the energy that they practice is come from the sexual energy condensed to the body and go out. And that is the sexual practice. That's all for the sexual practice. All you have to do is know what you're doing, and what is the sexual energy, and how to draw the sexual energy up, how to retain the sexual energy, and how to multiply the energy.
It should be said that there are other ways to fortify one's bioelectromagnetic field, or aura, by getting plenty of rest and relaxation, especially out in nature, where qi is abundant. Grounding oneself, remaining emotionally balanced, and physically fit are also important, as mind, body, and spirit complement each other. That said, a diet also plays a critical role in maintaining good health and replenishing nutrients, especially those traditionally associated as being an aphrodisiac, such as seafood. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through Patreon or various links available in the description section. Please subscribe and leave me your thoughts below as I read all the comments. Stay safe, and I hope to see you again soon.